So if everyone will stand, I will read it to you, Matthew chapter 2, verse 16. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceedingly wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coast thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. You may be seated. This is a more or less a history lesson. I know you don't like history lessons, but I hope you like this one. What time was it that Herod had diligently inquired of the wise men? King Herod was an Edomite, not an Israelite. He would be known as a Sephardic Jew in today's world. He questioned the wise men very thoroughly to find out when the future king was born, so he knew at what age his murderous rage would occur. The evil king murdered every child that was under the age of 2 years old in about a 10-mile radius. Why would he murder children under the age of 2 years old if Jesus was a newborn infant? In verse 11, it says that the wise men found the baby Jesus in a house, not a stable. Does that mean anything? What would this Edomite Jewish king get so upset about the birth of a young child? Why would he attempt his murder when he was only 2 years old? He wouldn't be one that would challenge Herod's rule for several decades, for he was too young. And Herod died shortly after the incident when Jesus was just an infant. What a vicious hatred the Jews had for the birth of Israel's king. But we live in a different time period. Our government is similar to the government that was in Judah over 2,000 years ago. Edomite Jews controlled the kingship. They controlled the Pharisees and the judicial courts. But ours is sort of like the Wizard of Oz. It's based on deception. The wizard ruled behind the curtain. No one knew who he was. He just gave out his instructions over a loudspeaker. Everyone just obeyed his instructions until the day he was finally exposed. That's the way our government now operates. There is a wizard behind the curtain that tells the elected officials what they are to do and say. Once one figures that out, they're on their way to understanding what they have to do to save their country from total disaster. They have to expose the person or persons who is or are giving the instructions, but is hidden behind the curtain. For example, some of the wizards behind the curtain in American history have been Samuel Untermyer, Colonel Mandow House, Bernard Barak, John Slidell, George Soros, and many others. Just recently, we had Justice Antonio Scalia, who just died under very suspicious conditions. He was known as a strict constructionist, meaning he held a view that the Constitution should be interpreted as it was originally written. But Scalia was a Roman Catholic, and he held the view that law can be made just by the legislature, but also by the Supreme Court. But that's not what it says in the Constitution, nor is it biblical. Then what is it? Is it Sharia law? No. But there's no trace of awareness that it is Talmudic or Jewish law, rabbinic law. No need to worry about Sharia law when we have the impact of Talmudic law on our nation. Just a few of the things that the Supreme Court has made into law in the last few years. The choosing of which skull and bonesman. Was it Carrie? or Bush was going to be president of the United States. The 1967 ruling that interracial marriage was constitutional. The recent ruling that's unconstitutional forbid the marriage of two homosexuals. The ruling in 1954 that said in Brown versus Board of Education that segregated schools are unconstitutional. The ruling that murdering a baby in the womb through the means of a doctor is not a legal murder. All these are forbidden in God's law. No secret society Freemason is allowed to even be nominated for president, let alone be one. Interracial marriage is an abomination to God, as is the marriage of two homosexuals. Integrated schools are wrong and sinful, and is murder if a doctor kills the child in the womb. So whose law permits all these things? It's Talmudic law. I'm going to talk about America's Civil War. Today's sermon is about the Civil War. It was not actually fought over slavery or states' rights, as we were taught, but the ownership of the most damaging thing in any nation's control, its national bank. Whoever controls the money is the master and not the slave. And the media played a large part in this fight. For the newspapers, magazines, publishing houses, and so forth have been used to create a hatred of the white race by the blacks. And the blacks have never been able to see past their next welfare check. It is because it is handed out because the Jews used the white race to supply the free food, medicine, clothing, housing, and so forth. But the blacks have remained slaves. It's just a different form of slavery. The old slave owners, both white and black, had to pay for their slaves' food, clothing, and medical expenses and provide housing. The government provides for its slaves food, clothing, medical expenses, and provides housing. Exactly the same thing. Therefore, the blacks change from one slavery to another. I can verify that where I work. The more babies they have, the more money they get. And they blame the white man when it was really the Jews who did it to them. It is possible that the Civil War was fought for reasons other than those traditionally offered. Is it possible that the real reasons for the war are among the secrets that some wish not to be revealed? Is it possible that slavery and state rights were not the real causes of the war? Another Jewish war. There is a principle, a law of God, that both the North and South violated. The law began when the kingdom first split into two separate kingdoms. Judah had an army of 180,000 warriors who were being readied for an attack on the house of Israel, in order to bring them back into the kingdom. But, quote, "Thus saith the Lord, ye," referring to the house of Judah, "shall not go up nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel." It's 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 24, the first part of the verse. And for once, the Israelites of Judah obeyed the voice of their God and did not fight against their brethren. The Civil War was, in a legal sense, an international war between America and the international banking monopoly of the Jews. And the victor of that war was the Jews. However, since they did not engage in any successful armed insurrection, as they later did with Russia, they had no right to physical occupation and control. Russia at this time was not under the control of a Jewish national bank. But God gave America into their hands by giving them legal control over the national government. The Civil War was just one of many steps of the legal control and captivity the Jews had over the United States government and legal system. I'll name a few of them. The Civil Rights Acts. the Reconstruction Acts, the 14th and 15th Amendments, the same-sex marriage decision, the interracial marriage decision, multiculturalism in the schools, sports, business, military, the legalization of abortion, and so forth. We're all revolutionary in nature, being based on the Jewish, communist, Zionist principles, which are contrary and foreign to the original American system. The United States Constitution, state autonomy, and the freedoms of the white citizenry were severe barriers for the advancement of these Judeo-socialist principles. Since they did not possess physical control, the Jews could only make advancements against the states or citizenry by deception and legal entrapments. From time to time, one can find an agent or a debtor of the Jew in political office to directly advance the causes of principles of socialism. And they found one in 1861. When we think of the Confederacy, the big names that all may come to mind are the three legends carved in the side of Stone Mountain, Georgia. The men are as tall as a 9-story building. There it is. Now don't turn the page, Randa. Can you name these three Confederate heroes? Stonewall Jackson. Robert E. Lee. The president.
Davis.
Jefferson Davis. Randa and I visited Stone Mountain almost 30 years ago when we were going to see her cousin who lived near Stone Mountain in Marietta, Georgia. It was a beautiful, impressive sight. It is comparable to the monument made of granite rock carving in South Dakota. It depicts four presidents of the United States. Oh, good. Four presidents of the United States. Don't flip the page. Do you know these four presidents? George Washington. Jefferson. Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt. And Abe Lincoln. Very good. The Jewish Rothschilds underwrote the financing of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Knights of the Golden Circle. It was a secret organization created in 1854, proposed to establish a slaveholding empire encompassing the southern United States, the West Indies, Mexico, and parts of Central America. Its center was Havana, Cuba. The empire would be some 2,400 miles in diameter. Hence the name, Golden Circle. Leaders of this secret society argued that their empire would have a virtual monopoly on the world's supply of tobacco, sugar, and perhaps cotton, and have the strength to preserve slavery in the South from constant attacks by Northern abolitionists. I got a picture of the, there it is, the Golden Circle. The diameter would be where? Havana, Cuba. So the southern states, Mexico, Central America, Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, and most of the Caribbean. This is the Golden Circle, everything in here. The Knights of the Golden Circle's golden dollars were laundered through. Go back to the map. Can you go back one? Where do you think it was laundered through? Canadian Bank. Montreal, Canada. Through a Montreal Bank, Canadian, by the Confederate Secretary of State, who I'm going to remain, he's going to remain nameless for a while. He was called the Brains of the Confederacy. And he was running so many Confederate spies out of Montreal that it was known as the Second Richmond. Second Richmond was Montreal, Canada. So many spies coming out of there. All in all, 11 southern states seceded from the Union. South Carolina was the first, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, Virginia, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Delaware, Maryland, Kentucky, and Missouri were slave states who remained in the Union. Yet the Confederate flag has 13 stars, which is a sacred Masonic number, sending to those who understood the succession of the Southern states was motivated by the Knights Templar Southern jurisdiction of the Southern Rites of Freemasonry. That's a powerful statement. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 stars. There were only 11 states in the Confederacy. Against this British intrusion into American politics, finance, and industry, General Albert Pike initiated the Southern Rebellion. In 1854, the Southern jurisdiction of Freemasonry founded the Knights of the Golden Circle as a front to direct this insurrection. Confederate General Albert Pike, who led the Indians to battle against the Union troops, and who was later dismissed from his generalship, was also a major leader of Southern jurisdiction of Freemasonry in Charleston, South Carolina. He was the author of the Masonic book, Morals and Dogma. He was the only Confederate soldier who has a statue in Washington, D.C. It's just 13 blocks from the White House. Now, don't turn the page yet. He's the only Confederate soldier who has a statue in Washington, D.C. There were some black groups who protested in front of that statue, wanted to come down. I just see the statue. Oh, not yet. Albert Pike was born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1809. And Albert Pike was no dummy. I think we would all call him a genius level. At the age of 15, he was offered a Harvard University education. But he had to refuse because the financial payments were too large. Later in his life, he was offered an honorary degree, but he refused. Pike was a genius. He learned 16 different languages in his lifetime. If I ask you, how many languages do you know? Probably the most would be one and maybe a tenth. I did study German 4 years, but I can go up to 1 through 10 and say good morning and good night. He learned himself 16 languages. And in 1831, he went on a westward journey to St. Louis, Missouri, the gateway of the West. He traveled from Independence, Missouri to Santa Fe, New Mexico. He joined about 70 others and traveled into Indian territory. So he was a venturous guy. So he went out to the Wild West. And he took a trip. He eventually became lost, tired, and very hungry. He was saved by the Osage Indians, who gave the group a 3-day feast when they were facing starvation. Pike said that these Indians saved his life. He traveled over 1,300 miles, but covered the last 365 miles on foot. He arrived in Fort Smith, Arkansas, broke and penniless. That's how he started out his life. He then became a school teacher for $3 a month. We complain about our salary. But that's back before inflation. He was able to develop his ability to write poetry. He was a good poet writer. He wrote about a Whig candidate, and Albert was able to get a job with a newspaper in his area. He met his wife, and with her dowry. You see, wives, you no longer have a dowry. It's forgotten. But it wasn't forgotten back then. With her dowry, he became able to build a home that still stands today. And he had 11 children. He was a colonel in the Union Army in the Mexican War and a brigadier general in the Confederacy. Albert Pike moved his law office to New Orleans and was heavily involved in secret societies. Both Albert Pike and another important person in the Confederacy, Pike and another important person in the Confederacy were members of the secret kings of the mystic crew of Comus. Very strange group here. Very important group. After the Civil War, Pike was indicted and sent to prison for treason by the United States government. Albert Pike, the big statue in Washington, D.C., was indicted and sent to prison for treason. He was pardoned by Lincoln's successor, Andrew Johnson, who also was a Freemason. Albert Pike awarded Andrew Johnson for this pardon the 33rd degree rite of passage. Wow. Albert Pike, another important person in the Confederacy, which I mentioned earlier up here, met with John Wilkes Booth in New Orleans during the winter 1863 and 64. You all know John Wilkes Booth, don't you? They are a part of the secret society. They belong to the same secret societies. After the assassination of Lincoln, they facilitated the murder of another man, James Williams, and had his body falsely identified as the body of John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth escaped and lived many years in exile. Well, now let's see the picture of Albert Pike. There it is. There's a statue. There's a woman down here. He's holding his book, Morals and Dogma. She's holding the book, Morals and Dogma. And there's a picture of him through the trees, if you want to turn it down. The trees. Albert Pike statue, head of the Scottish Rite, Southern jurisdiction of Masonic fraternity, and a leading Southern Democrat. His life-size statue has been accorded a prominent place in the nation's capital among the distinguished cities of America. Albert Pike was a leader of the Southern resistance, but you see, he was not carved on Stone Mountain. Got a statue in Washington, D.C., but not in Georgia. Freemasonry is a secret organization. They don't want a lot of people to know that they belong to that secret society. You think that they come out and say, I am a member of the secret society, vote for me. And do you happen to know where the Knights of the Golden Circle was founded? Right across the river, Cincinnati, Ohio. The Knights of the Golden Circle was part of the Masonic Scottish Rite. Between 1855 and 1860, this secret order had recruited, armed, and trained about 100,000 men in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Virginia, and Maryland, the South. 100,000 men. Wow. The Knights of the Golden Circle was the basis for the military organization of the Confederacy, while the Southern jurisdiction of the Rite was the political leadership of the South. The man in charge of this project is Albert Pike. But let's go back in time and study for a little bit another man who was the important leader of the Confederacy, but who's not on the carving of Stone Mountain. He was the wizard behind the screen who controlled the South. He worked for the Rothschilds. The Spanish Inquisition. In 1492, we know that was the year that Columbus sailed the ocean blue. But the year is known for something else. The Inquisition. This important leader's past relatives were part of the Inquisition. And his parents, Philip Benjamin and Rebecca de Mendez Benjamin, were Sephardic, that's descendants of Esau, Jews, who had immigrated to the West Indies, now called the Virgin Islands, from Spain. It's the Roman Catholics, remember that, the Inquisition? You either turn Roman Catholic or we'll kill you. Well, where's the Virgin Islands? It's in the Caribbean. Now, here is Florida, There's Cuba. There's Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And over here is the Virgin Islands. So here's the Virgin Islands. Here's where he lives, St. Croix. So here's where he is. They had come from the Inquisition. A couple hundred years later, he's born. When they heard that Jews were, tolerated? What? They'd been kicked out of most countries. Spain kicked them out. And allowed to prosper in the United States, the family moved to the United States in 1813, settling where? Charleston, South Carolina. Charleston later became headquarters of one of the branches of Freemasonry. Why? It had the largest population of Jews at that time in the United States. Freemasonry is Jewish. He attended Fayetteville Academy in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and entered Yale University in 1825 at the age of 14. Well, another genius. 14 years old? I was probably, ninth grade? And not only did he enter Harvard, he was the top student in his class when he was expelled in 1827. Why he was expelled is not clear. It was either for stealing from other students and or for gambling. See, now almost everyone would be expelled. Play the lotto and you do all that. Following his expulsion, Benjamin moved to New Orleans, where he clerked in a commercial house and studied law until he was admitted to the bar in 1832. So he becomes a lawyer. While studying, he supplemented his income by giving English lessons to the French Creole aristocracy. One of his pupils, Natalie St. Martin, became his wife in a Roman Catholic ceremony in 1833. So he's giving lessons to this French big up-de-up person. And they get married. So the Sephardic Jew marries a Roman Catholic. Very common. 1833. Though his wife was extravagant and notoriously promiscuous, Benjamin indulged her. It was really a marriage of convenience for both of them. Kind of like Obama and his wife. Benjamin continued his gayness and Natalie her promiscuity. While living in New Orleans, Judah quickly won the patronage of John Slidell. With Slidell's assistance, Benjamin became a prominent attorney, even serving for a period of time as the United States Attorney for New Orleans. Benjamin gained notoriety for covering up the growing terrorist activities of the Scottish Rite-sponsored Knight of the Golden Circle while serving as a local federal prosecutor. He covered up the growing terrorist activities for the Scottish Rite. Benjamin obtained a sugar plantation and an elegant townhouse on Bourbon Street. You ever heard of Bourbon Street, Dorians? He had 140 black slaves on his plantation. Benjamin began his political career in 1842 when he was elected as a Whig candidate to the lower house of the Louisiana legislature. Benjamin's wife was not supportive of his interest in politics, nor was she tolerant of his absences. In 1845, after 11 years of marriage, she moved to Paris, France, where she lived the rest of her life. He would go there once a year to see her. Quite a marriage that was. The couple rarely lived together again as husband and wife, but they never divorced. He was considered gay by many students of history. His name was Judah Benjamin. And there's a picture of him right there. In 1852, he ran as a Whig Party candidate for one of Louisiana's 90 state Senate seats. His successful bid for office made him the nation's first Jewish United States senator. Some consider him to be the second, as another senator was Jewish but refuted his religion before he became a senator. Anyway, he was chosen senator, not by popular election as we have it now, but by the state legislature. A popular election of senators did not happen until the 17th Amendment of the Constitution in 1913. Senators used to be picked by the state legislature. Now it's picked by the people. Well, that's a problem because now the senators can disagree with the state legislature. Also, in 1852, Benjamin was nominated to the United States Supreme Court by President Millard Fillmore. Benjamin declined the offer. Benjamin also turned down an appointment as ambassador to Spain in 1853. See, 1492, they get kicked out of Spain, and 1853 goes back as an ambassador. That's a good choice. No, he declined the offer. But here's something very interesting. While he was a United States senator, he met Jefferson Davis, who became what? The President of the South. Following a confrontation during which Benjamin relentlessly questioned Davis on a military bill, Davis insulted the Louisiana senator. In response, Benjamin challenged Jefferson Davis to a duel. One or both of them would get shot and killed. But before the duel happened, Davis apologized. The challenge was revoked, and they became very close friends. So, on February 25th, 1861, newly elected Confederate President Jefferson Davis named the Jew, Judah Benjamin, as the Attorney General for the Confederacy. So we got the Confederacy going. As a result of this cabinet position, Judah hosted dignitaries when President Davis was unable to and offered up his advice when it was needed. 7 months later, the Secretary of War, Leroy Walker, resigned from his position, and Davis appointed Benjamin as his successor. So now he's Secretary of War. So Attorney General, now he's Secretary of War. Lacking military experience, like Obama, no military experience, Benjamin found difficulty dealing with problems that plagued the Confederacy for the entirety of the war, namely lack of funding and supplies. Benjamin resigned from this position after the loss at the Battle of Roanoke Island, after which the general of that battle said he received little support from Benjamin. So in December 1862, Benjamin was appointed the vacant Secretary of State position. Attorney General, Secretary of War, Secretary of State. In early 1863, Benjamin was able to negotiate a deal with France for a loan of $15 million with a 7% interest rate. A deal lucrative for France, but desperately needed by the Confederacy. After Union victories at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, it wasn't long until Richmond and Atlanta fell to the armies of Sherman. Benjamin moved throughout the South with the rest of the Confederate executive branch, but left them for Florida after the surrender at Appomattox. After about 6 months of escaping capture by Union forces, Benjamin eventually made it safe to England. If you want to study what he did in those 6 months, he disguised himself and tried to get out of the country, shipwrecked. It's quite an adventure. But he eventually made it to England. While there, he took up the practice of law and became very successful. So successful that in 1872, Benjamin was selected the Queen's Counsel. He practiced law in England until 1883 when he retired to France. Shortly before he died in 1884, he burned all of his records. He died a very wealthy man. My conclusion. Well, you can disagree if you want. It's very controversial. But you can't disagree that Judah Benjamin was a very influential part of the South. He's called the brains of the Confederacy. God hates Edomite Jews. That's what it says. Why did the Southern leaders then promote one of them in their cabinet to hold three major positions? Attorney General, Secretary of State, Secretary of War. Why did they have men who were members of Jewish societies in their army? And the North was not better either. And today, we have Donald Trump, who is surrounded by Talmudic Jews. He announced his candidacy to take the heat of Hillary's secret files as Secretary of State. We have Ted Cruz. He was born in Canada. He's not a natural-born citizen. He was a major scriptwriter for the North American Union. That's when Mexico, Canada, and the United States have become one country. He is supported by many Jewish supporters. He, like Judah Benjamin, is gay. His wife works for the Jewish-owned Wall Street company, Goldman Sachs, of all things. She is a member of the Council for Foreign Relations. She has worked for other Wall Street companies. No need to say anymore what side they're on. We have Rubio, who is Jew-controlled. We have Hillary. The Clintons are Jew-controlled. Who is there to vote for? Absolutely nobody. We have the illusion of freedom. We have gays, Jews, Buddhists, and even women in our armed forces today. I talked to that serviceman about that. He says they're trying to get all Christians out of the army. Talmudic Jews are running our government. Jewish secret society are the means of control. We're under the control of occultists. How can our God possibly bless us? We need to be Israelites alone, not a multiracial mess that we now are. May God have mercy on our souls. I'm going to read you Matthew 23, verses 31 through 33, where Jesus Christ says, "Wherefore ye," that's the Jews, "be witnesses unto yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers." In modern English, that would say, "Go ahead then and finish off what your ancestors tried to do. You serpents, you generation of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell? Blessed be the Lord God of Israel."